Psalm 34 and verse 6. This poor man called or cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him or delivered him out of all his troubles. 34 Psalm and the 6th verse. Now, there's some problems for me with this psalm. I don't know if you find any problems. This text has some problems in it. You can ask me questions afterwards which I shall not be able to answer. The Lord delivered him out of all his troubles. I have a problem with verse 19. A righteous man may have many troubles, but the Lord delivers him from them all. Verse 20. He protects all his bones, not one of them will be broken. Well, I have a problem with that verse, and I freely admit it. Oh, I know the standard answer, of course. That was referring to Christ, and of course it is applied to Christ in the New Testament, and rightly so. And of course there are people who think all these psalms are all about Christ. Well, I'm not one of those people. I think this psalm is a testimony by David in this case, giving his own personal experience. And although there are some problems I can't solve, the main matter is very clear to me. So what I'm going to say to you is, although I can't answer your questions, I'm not going to dwell too much upon the difficulties. But what I am going to dwell upon is the promise here and the encouragement for God's people. If you like to look at the difficulties, that's very good. But for me, I want to take home some of the comfort of this psalm. And there's a lot of comfort in it for God's people. I say this is a personal testimony. I say David is giving us his experience. I am saying that he has found out in his own life, from day-to-day living, he has proved what he is telling us here. Whether he's proved it to the full extent that it seems, whether he's aspiring after it, I don't know. But I think he has tasted and seen how gracious the Lord is to him. Now, my friend, that's perhaps the most important thing I'm going to say this morning. This man has a personal experience of God dealing with him. Now, those Jehovah's Witnesses who come to our door, do you know they get their experience, they get their teachings and their ideas out of a book. Well, I don't want book experience. I've got a lot of books at home, if you saw my, what I might call study, although I don't know as I do much study, but my study, I'll call it that, has got a lot of books in it. But my friend, if my experience is made up of paper, then I haven't got anything. This man has a living experience of God, and he knows God, walking with God, living with God, talking to God, enjoying God, communing with God, finding God in his life day by day. That is what a Christian is. That is what a godly man is. That is what I need, a personal walk with God. Now, I mentioned Jehovah's Witnesses, but I'm afraid as I travel around, I come across chapels and churches and so on, and I cross people. My friend, I wonder, have you got a personal living experience of Christ? Do you know anything of it? Do you know what it is? The daily pant, I think the hymn writer puts it, I know it's old-fashioned, daily pant in his likeness to appear. Do you want to walk with him? Do you want to know him? Do you prove him? Have you proved him looking back in your life? Not just vague general prayers about thanking God for the weather and food and so on. That's all very well. But have you got a living experience? Could you say with David, this poor man called, cried, and the Lord heard him and delivered him out of all his troubles. I say again, there's problems in it, but it's a big problem. Have you ever cried and called to God? Have you ever proved and walked with him? Have you known him? I can go down the psalm. Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. Is there an echo in your heart? Do you feel like anything like I might confess now, that looking back over my 50-odd years of walking with Christ, I've so little glorified him, so little exalted him, and I want to glorify him, and I want to exalt him. So when people stupidly say, well, what are you going to do in heaven then forever? I'm going to glorify the Lord and exalt him forever. And that'll be enough. And more than enough. How about this one? I saw the Lord. I'm just glancing down the verses. It just so happens that verse 3 is at the top of this page. I sought the Lord and he answered me. He delivered me from all. Notice the eyes. We don't want too much eyes in the pulpit, but my friend, in religion we want a lot of eyes and me's. I sought the Lord. He delivered me, the Son of God who loved me. So I'm stressing this. I haven't got to the text yet. Whatever I say about the text is relatively unimportant. Do I know Christ? That I might know him, said the apostle, and the power of his resurrection. Jesus' final prayer, that they might know thee, and they might know thee and me, and so on. Whom to know is life eternal. Those who look to him, taste and see. Have you ever tasted and seen, my friend? You see, it's all personal experience here. Now, I don't know what you do in this church, but I remember that the best meetings I ever enjoyed were when people asked to be baptized. And when they came to speak to me, what did I want to hear? I didn't want to hear all the claptrap that everybody knows, the evangelical talk. I didn't mind how many mistakes they made. I wanted to hear them telling me something of their personal experience of walking with Christ and knowing Christ and finding him in some way. I must get to the text, but I really do stress that point. A living personal experience. The blind man. I can't answer all your questions, he said with the Pharisees. I don't know who did it. I don't know how he did it. I can only tell you one thing. I came this morning and I was blind. But now I can see. Now what a testimony is that? That will answer any Jehovah's Witness or any Pope or anybody else. I was blind, but now I can see. I can't tell you all the ins and outs of it, but I was blind and now I can see. Well, I think that'll shut anybody up. I mean, you could talk to a Cambridge theologian who could tell you in knots about the Bible, but if you were blind and you've now come to see and he's blind and still blind, you've got the makings of him, my friend. You've got the beatings of him, haven't you? You've got it. You were blind, but now you can see. I can't answer your questions, but I can see. But that's our text. This poor man called, and the Lord heard him, and he saved him out of all his troubles. Four little points, and I won't detain you long, four little points. But they're big points in a way. First, how does the godly man describe himself? Now, there's a great mark of a man who's had an experience of God. How did he look upon himself? How did he talk about himself? This poor man. The second thing I want you to see is that this poor man, this godly man, can know afflictions. Well, you say that's obvious. Well, not to talk to some Christians. They seem to think that once you become a Christian, everything is happy all the day and there's never a dark or dull moment. But this poor man must have had troubles. For over and over again in this psalm he said, I was in trouble and I'm in difficulties and I cried out. So my second point is, the godly man can know afflictions and trials. Now that may be just a little token of comfort for somebody here this morning. You may have been surrounded by people who've given you the impression that godly people never know any troubles. Now I've been in many troubles in my life, and I've been very glad never to be sitting down in a church and a congregation some Sunday mornings when it was all brighter than bright, because I didn't feel brighter than bright. My world had just fallen apart. And I didn't want to be told silly nonsense. I'm glad I can turn to a verse like this. This poor man cried and the Lord delivered him from all his troubles. So maybe there's a godly man here passing through trouble and you wonder why. And you don't think that fits in with being a godly man. My friend, let me put it the other way around. I rather fancy those who have no troubles may be not so godly as they think they are. Maybe there's more trouble for the godly man. I think there might be. Anyway, the third thing I want you to see about this godly man is, he cries. I know our version says called. I think cried is just as good. Cried, called. And we'll talk a little bit about that. And then the Lord heard him and delivered him out of all his troubles. David, first of all, describes himself. And he describes himself like this. I am a poor man, he said. Now that marks him out in my book. I don't know what, I haven't got telly, but I've got a radio and I listen to the news a bit. And these politicians come on and they never tell me that. They never give me the slightest impression that they think upon themselves as poor men. They brag and boast about what they've done. They're forever on about it. Oh, I did this, you know, and I did that, and all the rest of it. They're forever, it seems to me. Seems to be the spirit of the age in which I live. Men are boasting and bragging about what they can do, where they've been, what they've earned, what money they've got, what everything else. It's I, in the sense of me, I'm big. Now here's a godly man speaking, and he tells me something. And I want to look into my heart and see if I feel it. He says, what do I think of myself? I'm a poor man. But David, you're going to be king. Maybe you're king already. You call yourself a poor man? Oh, he said, you can have a lot of money in the bank, he said, and still be poor. In my book you can, he said. And I'm a poor man. Maybe he's not talking about his bank balance. Maybe he's not talking about his wealth and his palaces and all the rest of it. Maybe he's not talking about his power as a king and as a military commander. You killed a lion and a bear. You slew Goliath. Oh, yes, you can tell all that, he said, but I'm still a poor man. You see, that's how he looks upon himself. A poor man. Now, if I can be personal, I'm glad I can say. I hope I'm not bragging about it, but I feel relief. Yeah, relief. I feel relief that I can say, I don't kick at that. That's how I feel about myself. How do you feel about yourself, my friend? How would you describe yourself? This man says, I'm a poor man. What do you mean, David? Well, as I look at my spiritual attainments, I think I've reached very low, low level. I've reached a very poor standard. But you've written all these psalms. You've done all this. But I still, he says, feel I'm a poor man. And my understanding of this is that the more godly a man is, the more poor he feels. The more he realizes that he's got so far to go. His understanding. Now, you must understand a lot, David. You're a prophet. You're a psalmist. Oh, dear. I'm a poor man. But you must be strong in yourself. You must be a very fit and able man within yourself to be able to cope with all these difficulties. I see on the top of our Bible here, it says, of David, a psalm of David, when he pretended to be insane before Abimelech, who drove him away. When he was making out, he was mad because he was scared stiff. To me, people get the wrong impression about the Bible. They get the wrong impression about these men of God. They think about Paul, that he knows it all, he's sure, he's strong. Read some of it and see for yourself. Read 1 Corinthians, read the 2 Corinthians 12 and see. Read about their afflictions. How they cry out, Lord, keep me from this, deliver me from this. And the Lord says, no. And so he said, I had to learn. He said that my weakness made strength. It was when I was weak that I was strong. And he writes to the Corinthians and he says, God has chosen the weak things, the foolish things, the things of nobody and nothing. I mean, I'm amazed at God. I'm amazed at his creation. When they show me these pictures of animals, how peculiar they look, and the oddities of creation. We went to a flower show the other day, and we saw the oddest flowers and shapes and stuff. And it's amazing, the creation. God seems to delight in oddities. And now I look at the church, and he's made us up, and look at preachers, and he's made us up of the weakest of peoples, and the nobodiest of the world. And Paul says, I've done that deliberately, says God, so that nobody can glory in my presence. God's people are always, in their own estimation, weak and feeble and poor. It's a great mark, my friend, if you feel it. Do you feel it? I'm a poor, sinful, needy, weak mortal. I started off this morning, did I not? Opening up with this. That there were problems in this passage that I couldn't solve. See, I'm sure of my weakness. You don't do that, do you? Well, I do. I do. That's what David does. I don't stand here because I know it all. I don't stand here because I've experienced this. To some measure I have. I want to experience it. But I don't come pretending that I've got this and I know this and this is how you've got to do it. I'm addressing myself. Somebody prayed this morning about the hearers. I don't know whether he thought he was including me. I think it was David prayed it. But he was including me. That's what I felt. Yeah, for me too. I want to know that I'm a poor man. I don't want to be proud and confident and sure. I don't want to go the way of the world. There's too many texts to tell me. God dwells with he that is lowly, contrite. Blessed are the brokenhearted and the contrite and all the rest of it, meek. All upside down, my friend. The way of God is upside down to the way of the world. Well, I must go on as the time will be gone, but do you feel it? If you don't, my friend, I question whether you ever come to know Christ at all. If you've ever met Christ, you've met a real man. You've met the big man. You've met the top man. You've met the one who is rich. Yet even he, for our sakes, became poor. But there you are. We could tell all morning on this. He was born in a manger. Amazing, isn't it? Do you know, I admire the wisdom of God. I really do. When I think about it, the daft ways it seems that God goes about things, but the glorious ways it works out. He's born of a virgin in a manger. He wasn't born like Herod down the road. And our politicians are worried about their heritage, aren't they? What people are going to remember them for. There'll be footnotes. And here's a man in this chapel, and there's men round these chapels all preaching this glorious man who never set out to make himself a historical name, as you might say, but he was the greatest of all. I must go on. This poor man has many troubles. I know that. This psalm is full of it. This poor man called and the Lord heard him. He saved him out of all his troubles. I've already said what I want to say on that. Let me just underline it again. God's people can be brought through very difficult experiences. Can be, they are, my friends. God disciplines us. He chastens us. He trains us. He brings us to a sense of our sins. He brings us to a sense of our failures. Have you got any? Have any failures? Anything gone wrong? Or can you explain it all? Well, you're different to me then. Can you understand it all? I certainly can. This poor man, he looks at his afflictions and trials. He's made his mistakes and his sins, they come up before him. His conscience racks him. Circumstances come into his life. Illnesses come. Troubles come of one kind or another. They come thick and fast upon him. I say that to your encouragement, godly friend. I say it to your encouragement. You may do as you will, but I'm not going to believe the nonsense they tell me about H-A-P-P-Y, I'm happy all the day and all that. I'm not going to believe it. I can't believe it. It's not in my Bible. It's certainly not in my experience. And I say that to somebody's comfort here, because maybe you're feeling, because it's not all going bright and cheerful, then you can't be godly. I say again, that is not necessarily a mark of it. I would say the opposite. Many are the afflictions of the righteous. That's in this text somewhere. A righteous man may have many troubles. Perhaps you're going through it now. I don't know. I was a little encouraged last Sunday evening. I was preaching somewhere and I was preaching on a text. A lady came to me afterwards and she said, I'm having an operation. Somebody had prayed for her in the meeting, mentioned about it. And I'm having an operation. She said, and I remember what you said on Wednesday when I was going in the operating theatre. And I thought that was a little encouragement. I mean, this lady was obviously afraid. I must have said something which just touched a chord. And I hope she did remember it. And I hope it was a blessing to her. Maybe she came out, that was wet Sunday evening, she came out, maybe you thought, well, I could stay in really because it's pouring with rain, but she went, she sat there, and she got something. I hope she took it with her, she said she would. I couldn't say to her, well, you won't need the operation, I'll just put my hand on you and you'll soon be... No, I didn't say that, I gave her a text, and that went with her, and I hope that did her more good, my friend. Perhaps you don't agree with me, but that's my position. If you're an unbeliever here, I'm not going to tell you, become a Christian, it's all going to go well. If you want it all to go well, my friend, in this life, don't become a Christian. That's what I would say to you. If you want peace and comfort and joy and happiness, as you might call it, in this life, all being easy, hunky-dory in this life, not that it is, mind, not that it is, but if you do, then don't become a Christian, because your problems will start. I will not talk about eternity. Eternity may be a very different story. My friend, don't become a Christian just to make it life easy, because when you become a Christian, many are the afflictions of the righteous. But there are many compensating joys too. Many pleasures that we cannot explain fully, because we've not tasted for ourselves yet. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good, said the psalmist. This same man, blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. The third thing I want to point out to you is this poor man, when he comes into afflictions, there is something natural within him. Again, a great mark to me. Something within him. He cries out. Now, on the first level, I don't know whether that simply means he cries out. I don't know whether you do. Perhaps you're very stoical, as I might say, and you might keep the stiff upper lip and all the rest of it, and you never cry out. Well, I'm not in your company, I'm afraid, because I know what it is to cry out. I don't talk about prayer just at the moment, I'm just talking about crying out. And I'm not sure that David is talking about prayer, absolutely. I think he may just mean, I cried out. Lord, help me. But that's prayer, of course, but he just cries out. But of course, I think he does mean, yes, that he is crying out to God, for the Lord heard him. But my friend, let me just pause a moment there. Even if it's not directly, oh, let's put our hands together and say our prayers and all the rest of it. If it's not that, if it's just simply in his desperation that he calls out, the Lord still hears him. Now, I tried to catch a bit of that in my prayer just now. I tried to get a sense of God and his greatness concerned with all the universe. Now, what does that mean? And yet he's concerned with my small affairs. And so when I cry out in pain, cry out in darkness, cry out in anguish, I don't know what to do. Even though I'm not directly praying, he's seeing me and hearing me. So that dear lady went into the operating theatre. It wasn't when she prayed just before she went in, it was all right. Even when she was unconscious, it was still all right. God was still looking after her, wasn't he? He was still there caring for her. The Lord was still hearing her. Isn't that a wonderful comfort? We might be poor. We are poor. We might have many afflictions, yes. And we're crying out, but God is listening. Does it say somewhere, yes, he does, about my tears he puts in a bottle? He doesn't let one teardrop go. God knows all our affairs and cares for us. In all our afflictions, he was afflicted. I heard a man speaking yesterday on Saul's conversion. And he mentioned this point. And it's an obvious point, but I just bring it to you again. Remember when Christ says to Saul on the Damascus Road, you're persecuting me. Well, he wasn't actually. He was persecuting the disciples. Ah, but when you persecute disciples, you persecute Christ. So when the disciples feel it, Christ feels it. So when these people in Indonesia are locking up these dear ladies because they're believers, or cutting off hands or doing what they want to them and all the rest of it, they're doing it to Christ, my friend. For he feels, he hears, he wears, he knows, he senses their distress. It's a very wonderful thought. In all their afflictions, he was afflicted. This poor man called, the Lord heard him. God does listen to our prayers. Now, of course, there's a problem for me. I can't answer all this. How does God hear our prayers? How can I be sure of it? Does it sometimes seem that he's saying no? Does it sometimes seem he's not listening? Of course, we've got all these questions, haven't we? Yes, of course we have. But this is what David said, the Lord heard him. And then he delivered him out of all his troubles. Well, that's my problem, isn't it? Now, my friend, I've experienced it to better measure. Have you experienced it? Have you not known God opening up a door when it just seemed all was closed? Has the sky not parted and the darkness come and a little light come? Have you not enjoyed singing that hymn, Begone unbelief, my Saviour is near. By prayer let me wrestle and he will perform. With Christ in the vessel I smile at the storm. Have you experienced it at all? Look back over your life. Some of you have been walking with Christ 20, 30, 40, some like me 50, maybe longer years. Look back. Have you not seen time and again God has intervened? Christ has heard. You have called to him. The way has opened. The mist has cleared, hasn't it? And let's bring it up to the top level. By faith, can we not see, can we not say, those of us who are believers, one day we shall be delivered out of all our troubles. One day we shall be released from every affliction. One day sin, my worst enemy before, shall vex my eyes and ears no more. Then shall I see, then shall I hear, then shall I know all I've longed for while here below. Did you not enjoy that Newton's hymn again? And then, the conqueror's song and all that verse, did you not enjoy that? The thought that one day we shall be triumphant, we shall come through all our trials and afflictions. We shall be delivered. I remember once I was in some continual sort of nagging illness. It was not an illness, it was stress really. I didn't know what it was, but I was feeling horrible and rotten. And I remember saying to my wife, will it be like this in heaven? What a stupid thing to say. Well, I always feel like this. And of course she said, no, of course not. But of course it's not. Isn't it wonderful? We shall be delivered from it. What have you got? What's on your mind now? What's pressing in emotionally, physically, spiritually? What is it? What's hurting? What's paining now? Dear child of God, there's coming a time when that will vex you no more. I am not sending you away in the hope that if you pray now an automatic prayer, like a penny in the slot and the chocolate falls out, it's not going to be like that. No, no, my friend. But God will sustain you through that now. But however bitter the way, however dark the pathway may have to be, there's coming a time, my friend, when all will be well. I don't know why I should go on talking. Let me read a few verses to let the Bible do a bit of talking as I finish. Do you know you can open the Psalms almost at random and find what I've said to you this morning? Surely you prove that. In my distress I called to the Lord. I cried to my God for help. From his temple he heard my voice. My cry came before him into his ears. That was Psalm 18, verse 6. How about this one? My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? And so on. In you our fathers put their trust. They trusted you and you delivered them. They cried to you and were saved. In you they trusted and were not disappointed. But I am a worm and not a man. I know they don't like worms today in the hymn books, but I am a worm and not a man. I am a poor man, scorned by men, despised by the people. All who see me mock me, they hurl insults, shaking their heads. He trusts in the Lord, let the Lord rescue him, and so on. Yet you made me trust in you, and so on. That's Psalm 22. Does it ring a bell anywhere, my friend? In a minute, breaking of bread. This is a reference primarily to the Lord Jesus Christ. I believe it's David in the Psalm. I believe it's David speaking of his experience. But it's Christ, is it not? And that's my final point to you, my friend. Why can I be so sure of this? Because of what the Bible says about Christ. Because he went this way. In all his afflictions, he was being afflicted so that he might comfort us. You know the text I'm referring to. It's in Hebrews chapter 4. Let us come boldly to the throne of grace, that we may find grace and help and so on. Why is that? Because at that throne of grace, there is Christ. And he has passed this way before. Look at him upon the cross. Could you see a poorer man? Hear him crying out. See him delivered. In all these things he was learning obedience by the things that he suffered, that he might comfort us with the comfort that he himself had received of God. I'm sure of it. Just before we came out, we read it home. Just to show you this completely, as you might say, random. And this is the verses we read. In my anguish I cried to the Lord and he answered me by setting me free. The Lord is with me, I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? The Lord is with me, he is my helper. I will look in triumph on my enemies. It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in man. It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in princes. That's Psalm 118. And we can go on. I've got others down here. You could almost open the psalm at random and you will find what I'm talking about. Psalm 107, I don't know where, all over the place. The psalmists are ever on about it. Because it comes back to my first point. They've had this personal experience with God. They've walked with God. They've gone through the changing scenes of life, which come to all men, believers and unbelievers. And in all their experiences, they have proved the presence and the comforts of God. My friend, have you? Have you tasted and seen? Have I been speaking this morning way above your head? You don't know what I'm talking about. You don't know what it is. Your prayers have been too vague and general and abstract. You've kept into the vague generalities. You don't know what it is to cry out personally. My friend, begin now. I don't care whether you're 16 or 160, I was going to say. I don't care what your age is. Begin now. If you have never cried out, God, be merciful to me, a sinner, cry that one. If you've never said, Lord, I look to you, help me in all my troubles and difficulties. Lord, me. I want this personal experience. Begin now, my friend. Begin now. And then you can add your little signature to this verse. You can say, yes, June the 3rd, 2007. That text, Psalm 34:6, preached Staunton Chapel. And by God's grace, that day I began to cry out. And I can say the Lord heard me and delivered me. Friends, don't rest short of that. Don't know there's been a good time this morning in the chapel for everybody. Don't know there's a good time for the Staunton Chapel. No, it's been for you. I told you the story before about that lady, didn't I, who was going to be murdered by her husband if she heard John Fletcher, when she said, it's all... Have I told you that one? Can't remember. Have I told you? Well, I'll tell you. Right. Just comes to my mind. There was a lady whose husband was a violent man. He was a butcher and he had a furnace. And he said to her, she wanted to hear John Fletcher. John Fletcher was a Methodist preacher along with Wesley and Whitfield. And she used to go to hear John Fletcher. And her husband hated her going to hear John Fletcher. And he said, you must never go and hear John Fletcher again. If you do, he said, I will kill you. He was a violent man and he had a furnace. And he said this, you may think it's stupid, but he said to her, I will put you in there. Now that's what he said to her. Sunday morning she came down dressed. He said, where are you going? I'm going to hear Fletcher. When you get back, he said, you know what you're going to get. Fletcher stood in the pulpit that morning and he said, friends, he said, I don't know what it is. My subject has gone quite from me. He said, I cannot preach what I was going to preach. For some reason or other, I don't know what it is, he said, but I've got to turn to the book of Daniel. And of course, he preached on the fiery furnace. He said, I don't know why it is, but that's how I must preach on the fiery furnace. And he preached on the three in the fiery furnace. And this is what the woman said. I found, this is one of the loveliest things I've ever read. I found it was all for me. All for me. I could weep over it now as I think about it. All for me. That's what I want every sermon. That's what I want every time I open the Bible. For me. For me. I'm not interested in particular redemption and this and that and the other. I want it for me. And she found it was all for her. Now, if the story stops there, my friend, that'd be very wonderful. That's the story to me. Of course, when she got home, her husband was on his knees praying. He was crying. He was converted. That's the yeah. But the wonderful thing to me is she found it was all for me. Was there anything for you this morning, my friend? Anything? For? Crying? Lord hearing? Delivering? Nothing for you? Then I'm sorry if I failed, my friend. But may God's Spirit put it into our hearts so that we can say it was all for me. I'm that poor man. And by God's grace I have cried. And I believe he has heard me. And I believe that Jesus stands at God's right hand to intercede for me. And I trust him. And I believe he has passed that way for me. So with Paul I'll say the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. Well, I hope it is for you, my friend. I hope it is.